Nancy, my name is Patrick Butler. I'm 71 years old. Today's date is December 8, 2022. I live in Wichita, Kansas, and I'm here with my one small step partner, Nancy.
Hi, Patrick. My name is Nancy Dooling, and I am 60 years old. Today's date is December 8, 2022, and I am in Wichita, Kansas. I'm here with my one small step partner, Patrick.
So, Patrick, you can read by Nancy's bio.
I read it out loud. I'm sorry. I have been blessed that I grew up in a small town close to the city of Wichita. I have been involved in the Wichita community for over 30 years, working and volunteering for nonprofits. I want Wichita to be a thriving community that new businesses would want to move their business to this area. This is why I have chosen the different nonprofits to be involved in with the community. My slogan has always been, make a difference by being a positive person in the community.
And Patrick's bio is that he joined the Navy right out of high school. He was sent to Vietnamese language school, served in Vietnam 14 months, married a Vietnamese woman, adopted her daughter, and they have one child together. They divorced. He retained custody of his daughters. His ex-wife had another daughter who adopted him as a stepfather. She introduces him to her children as grandpa. He remarried his best friend and the love of his life. They've been together and are happy for 32 years. He has been diagnosed, and I apologize if I...
Polycythemia.
Okay. For 30 years, he is now in the end stage. His daughters are all successful and he has 6 grandchildren.
Okay. May I start? So what nonprofits do you volunteer with?
The nonprofits that I have volunteered for, in the past, I've been like a big brother, a big sister program, so it was a big sister. I have been the walk chair for the American Heart Association, have been involved with the Susan Komen Foundation, and did not share that in my bio, but I am a breast cancer survivor, so that is why I was involved with those type of nonprofits. And I currently am involved, I've been involved with Junior League that does a number of nonprofit programs. I'm in Rotary, and that's actually how I learned about the One Small Step program. Someone presented that, and I just thought, you know, I'd like to get involved. I'd like to meet someone new and, you know, learn about the different, you know, differences that we have, but how do we learn to agree, you know, and work together? And it looks like we have some different questions here. So I'm trying.
Well, I would like to get to know each other better before we get into the questions, if that's
sure.
Okay with you.
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate that too. So I would like to, with the different, you communicated that you were in the Navy, and just like to learn how you like getting into the Navy compared to the other armed services. I know that, you know, there's other ones that could have been selected, but just to learn why you selected the Navy.
I picked the Navy because I wanted to see something other than Wichita. Okay. And part of it was I wanted to avoid combat in Vietnam. If you recall, well, you probably don't recall because you're too young, but at the time there was a draft, and I joined when I was 17 to basically take control of my life and not let the waiting for the draft control my life.
Yes.
I joined the Navy because I literally wanted to see the world. I didn't want to be stationed at McConnell Air Force Base. I didn't want to go into combat with the Marines or the Army. Ironically, when I went into the Navy, when I signed up, I asked to be a hospital corpsman, not realizing that when a Marine yells medic, a Navy hospital corpsman responds, and that at the time all the hospital corpsmen were going to Fleet Marine medic school and were put into combat. Fortunately, I scored on the military's the Navy's foreign language aptitude test, and when I say scored, I had a 10, but that was enough to put me into a 47-week North Vietnamese language program.
Well, it's very impressive, and thank you for your service. When I saw that, you know, you had the Vietnamese language, I figured it had, you know, naturally had to pertain back to the, you know, service part of it, but just was interested in the Navy part. So thank you for sharing.
Well, my job in the Navy was pretty much signal collection and surveillance. I was in an air crew, and we flew out of Da Nang. We flew off the coast in the Gulf of Tonkin, and we flew the Laos North Vietnamese border. And I couldn't tell you that until about 10 years ago because it was all classified. They even, for my written evaluations, they even had a cover story.
Wow.
Which and I'm still a little bit uncomfortable talking about it. I'm becoming more comfortable.
Okay. Well, again, thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Have you had the flight honor? I know several people that are involved with the flight honor that take leaves from Mid-Continent and goes to Washington, D.C.
The honor flight? No.
Yes, honor flight.
My sister lives in Gaithersburg, Maryland, and I've toured Washington, D.C. pretty frequently. Until COVID, we celebrated Thanksgiving with my sister in Gaithersburg, and we always combined that with a visit downtown, see the wall.
Okay.
When I was, my language school was in Virginia, right outside of D.C. And I spent a lot of time in the Smithsonian then, and I still, when I visit, I still make it a point to stop in at the Smithsonian and visit some things. You know, only about 10% of the Smithsonian's collection is on display, and there's always something new to see.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, something you shared, you know, was about your adoption with your daughter. And I did not put in my bio, and I apologize for not doing that, but my husband and I adopted 3 children from foster care. So that's another one of my, and being involved with nonprofits, is that I had heard the needing more foster homes, and my husband and I had did that. And you thought, you know, it's one of those situations, we didn't go into doing it for adoption, but then we eventually adopted three girls. So, and for you to say your children are successful, congratulations. I wish I could say that, but they're still growing.
Well, just from my experience, I find that children who've been adopted struggle. I think there's kind of a, no matter what age they were separated from their parents, I think there's an innate sense of abandonment that they carry their entire lives. And
yes,
I've seen some successful children adopted, but for the most part, I struggle. And I give you credit for the fact that you've gone through that struggle.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I just, it's one of those things that we try our best and, you know, working through it. But the best thing that came out of it is now I've got four grandchildren, know, and that's the best. And I get to see two of them every week and spend time with them. And that of all the struggles we had, that the grand boys make up for them. The grandbabies make up for it. So,
all of my daughters are out of town, and sometimes I feel a little abandoned. But like we'll get the whole family was together. My oldest granddaughter, who just turned 27, got married in Texas, and she had a reception here.
Nice.
At my ex-wife's house, and the entire family was together for that.
Nice.
And
nice.
We'll be together again at Christmas.
Very nice.
We have kind of a unique blended family, even though my three daughters each have different fathers. They are closer than most sisters. They FaceTime with each other almost every day.
Wow, that's neat.
And I just feel I'm very proud of the fact that there are so many differences in my family that we've been, but we're still so close together. You know, my ex-wife and her husband are in that blended family too. I'm not married to her anymore, but we're still close friends. And in fact, in June, my unit in Vietnam had a reunion, and my ex went to the reunion. She worked for our unit. That's how I met her. She worked for our unit in Vietnam, and I didn't realize it until this last reunion how important she was to the morale of everybody living there, everybody stationed at Da Nang. Well, all the people in my unit stationed at Da Nang. I think it was, you know, the fact you had a pretty young woman and we were pretty, you know, isolated group of men. And we even get tired of ourselves sometimes.
I see. Well, it's nice that you're still able to get together and have those friendships, and very nice.
Yeah, I don't carry very much animosity for anybody. I don't have the energy for it, and two, I just don't see where it accomplishes anything.
I agree with you. That is so true. And that's, I mean, honestly, that's kind of why, you know, with this situation today, I know, you know, everybody has differences, and how do we, you know, work through those differences, but still can get along, you know, that's, and I don't know. I just feel like anymore, there's so much, hatred, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, at the end of the day, what does that accomplish? You know, what you mentioned, your energy, it's not worth putting that energy in that use.
Well, and that's why I'm here too, is because I see so much vitriol, and I don't have animosity for anybody. I don't agree with everybody on everything, but I believe that we can be civil and agree to disagree and still remain friends. Most of the closest friends I have are in that that unit I was in with, the, you know, the people I was at war with, and they many of them have completely opposite political views, but we've always been able to set those aside and remain cordial with one another. So
that's good.
Well, I was going to tell you what I do. I just finished a class up at WSU in creative writing. My goal is I'd like to write a book on the angst. I call it the angst of the draft back in the late 60s, early 70s. What young men and their families faced when they turned 18 and had to go register and wait and see what was going to happen with their lives. And going through a period of not knowing what was going to happen with their lives. And it's going to be a novel with a little bit of history thrown in there. But I volunteer with KMEW, the radio station. Mm-hmm. I also participate in their literary feast. I am close to Harry Hines, and I'm going to talk to them about, I'm sorry, Harry Hines Memorial Hospice.
Yes, yes.
And I'm going to talk to them. I missed it last night. They had a tree lighting last night, and I got busy and lost track of it. But I was going to talk to them about maybe doing some volunteer work for them. I don't know what volunteers do for them. I was looking at Wichita Children's Home. They have some volunteer program, and I sent an email, but I haven't got a response yet. So anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. That was a group I didn't mention earlier that I had volunteered for with Wichita Children's Home. Okay. And that's kind of how we got into the foster care part of it too.
Yeah.
So I apologize for interrupting.
No, that's all right. I was doing a lot more when I was, after my wife passed and, I became a, I actually went back to the place I was working for at it. I ended my career as a working in the contracting at the McConnell Air Force Base.
Oh.
And I'd become the mentor of a lot of airmen and mm-hmm. new civilians. And I volunteered and went back, and I was working 20 hours a week, doing contracting work and just being there answering questions and making suggestions and that sort of thing. But then COVID came. Yes. And they shooed me out the door.
Yes.
And then I kind of went into hibernation. About the only time I got out was to see my doctors, and I'd go to Dillon's once a month for prescriptions and food, but I was pretty isolated for 2 years, and I'm just now coming out of isolation. I still wear a mask everywhere, and will continue to wear a mask everywhere.
And I'm sure because of, you have a, you know, disease that you have to protect yourself. So right. That's completely right.
Yeah, it can affect my immunity to disease. And yes. So, and I found that, you know, the little colds and nuisance things that go on, I haven't, since I started wearing a mask, I just haven't had those. And I don't know whether it's the mask or just not being out or around people. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. During COVID, I worked for an organization called Grace Med. Uh-huh. And so we were one of the very first facilities to offer COVID testing.
Oh, okay.
And I have to tell you, it was so interesting to see how it all came together. Because we did the COVID testing outside.
Right.
Because, you know, at the time you just didn't have a lot of information. And it was great to see our different departments come together because like the maintenance guys, they created a shield. So like the doctor, when they would administer the test, you know, sometimes people would choke or, you know, they could get body fluids on the doctor. So they did this shield to protect the doctors from doing the test. So mm-hmm. It was really interesting to see how the different departments at Grace Med came together to have this testing site and everything.
Yeah,
so.
I've always had a great deal of respect for Grace Med because of their delivery of services and extent of their services. I think they're probably the, in my mind, they're probably the foremost medical provider for the indigent and those without medical insurance.
Yes. That was my responsibility there, was to help tell the community about the services that we had. And you know, there's a lot of people that didn't have insurance, so I would do fundraisers to help underwrite, you know, to help with that funding, the people that didn't have the insurance and different things. But yeah, it's just amazing how much the organization has grown. And again, when the community has some challenges, they've always been there to find ways. And that's, you know, I like being involved in those type of opportunities, is, you know, working to make our city a better place to live, especially for children and families. So we have some questions up here.
I was thinking the same thing. do you want to start?
Sure. Do you ever feel misunderstood by people with different beliefs than yours?
To be honest, I'm very reticent to share my political beliefs with people because of the current climate.
Sure.
And that's part of the reason I'm here. I have found that once I talk about my political beliefs and get to the basis of my political beliefs, that we're not that much different. It's just how we express those, how we turn those beliefs into a political connection.
Sure. But I agree with you. I don't usually talk about it either, because I feel like people will disagree, and it's like, how do we come together to agree? And again, that's really kind of why I signed up too, for this program.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. My doctor is very conservative and very critical of the Democratic presidents, but he and I, you know, he introduced me to student nurse in his office and said, you know, this is, you know, he's been here quite a while and we disagree completely on politics, but we get along otherwise. And I think that's where I'd like to be with most people.
Right.
I don't need to, not necessarily that we need to disagree, but we tend to surround ourselves, but with people who are like us.
Right.
And I want to, I guess I want to expand that.
Sure.
When I was out at McConnell, I was active in the union out there, and I became closely associated with the president and the chief steward were Black, and I became exposed to their culture a lot. Uh-huh. And to me, they were both amazing individuals. Marshall grew up in East St. Louis, and when he goes back to visit, all of his friends that he grew up to and went to high school with are either dead or in prison. And, you know, he got himself out of that early, joined the Air Force, did a 20-year career, and then retired and went to work as a civilian out at McConnell. And I just find him making those changes in life pretty amazing. And the president was, he came from South Philadelphia, and it was kind of the same thing. You know, they kind of, I just had a lot of respect for how they succeeded in a culture that doesn't want them to succeed.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Yeah. I know that's, you know, when we were talking about children of being successful and stuff, and, you know, I try very hard to understand, you know, my children that I adopted. But there's just been, you know, challenges of decision-making and different things like that. And I tried very hard to show them, you know, you've got to work hard and you've got to have education, because where they had come from, you know, their parents did not have high school diplomas. Sure. And different things like that. And so we tried very hard to expose them to educational opportunities. And so, you know, hearing you share those stories about Marshall and stuff, you know, there are people that can overcome that, you know.
Right.
And again, just that's just one of my disappointments, I guess, in life, is not being able to have gotten my children over that, you know, hump of poverty and education success.
Right. I understand. And I guess I was fortunate. My oldest daughter didn't graduate from college, but she's a membership director at a country club in Texas.
Oh, nice.
And she is so effective that she works for a company called Club Corps, and they own 500 so clubs across the country.
Wow.
And she's one of their top performers. And if they had a PhD course in getting people to do what you wanted them to do and them liking it, she'd be teaching the course.
Yes.
My second daughter, it's my biological daughter. And, you know, in college, you know, your first psychology class, they talk about nature versus nurture.
Right.
And I was a big nurture person, and I still am to a certain extent. But my daughter and her children have really convinced me that there's a lot of biology and personality. And, you know, she and her oldest, my grandson, he even looks like me with little slightly Asian eye, oriental eyes.
Yes.
And we think alike and act alike, but she graduated from college and went on to optometry school, and she's an optometrist up in Overland Park, and she's
Oh, wow.
Very successful.
Yes.
He's on the governor's board, medical board.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, she right now she's going, it's just more time I don't have.
Right, but, true.
but I guess, you know, I have very, I guess, progressive views, and I try to avoid putting labels on those because I'm fiscally conservative, not only in my views of politics, but in my personal life. But I also believe that there's a lot of things that, you know, I guess my 40% of the children in this country go to bed hungry. And yes. I just see that as kind of
it shouldn't happen.
It shouldn't happen. No, and I mean, we're the richest country in the world,
right?
And we have basically we have children living in the third world, and the bottom line is, if we don't fix that, those children are going to grow up angry,
right?
And we're just going to keep having this culture of anger and dissent. The last book we read at my book club was How to Start a Civil War. And this is one of the things they suggested in the last chapter to avoid starting a civil war is people talking to one another. But it was kind of scary. It was kind of a scientific analysis, and they were looking at what happened in other countries and compared it with what's happening in our country now. And to be honest, the first six chapters were a kind of a horror story. The last chapter was that, you know, there's some hopeful things going on, and that so that we can avoid the violence. But I guess I'm concerned
right
about those things, and that's one of my concerns for the future of the country, is that we've got to figure out how to get along and stop the violence. You know, there was that incident in Virginia where somebody shot up two electrical substations and put 40,000-50,000 people without electricity for 3 days. And that's scary.
Right.
That's in my mind, that's an act of terrorism. So,
I agree with you on that. I just, violence doesn't solve anything.
No.
And again, we have our differences, but how can we work together and come together?
Right. And one of the points of that book was civil wars are not usually started by, well, I mean, they're usually started by people who feel like something is taking something away from them. And I think in our country, I feel like the changes in our economy from a manufacturing economy to a service economy has left a lot of people underpaid and underappreciated. And I think that many people feel, there's many people who feel like, I don't have that good paying auto parts, making auto parts, or I don't have those good jobs, and somebody has taken those jobs away from me. And a lot of times they see minorities and women as those who took them away, because women have become so successful in business. And mm-hmm. men are saying, well, they're successful women. They've taken my place. And in the same way with successful Black and Brown people, they see, people see that, see them being successful, and they're saying, well, that there, I should be there. And I guess that's, I guess I'm trying to understand the source of all the resentment and anger in large groups of the, this country.
I'm gonna step in for just a second, and I'm just gonna make a suggestion, Patrick, that maybe you ask Nancy one of the questions in the list.
Okay. Have any of your political beliefs evolved over the years?
I would say no, no to that. No. I mean, when it comes to my political beliefs, I really, you know, when it comes to voting and things, I always look at the candidate and what I feel like who is doing the right, who would do the right job or who would do the best job. So when it comes, that's, I mean, I just don't really get into a lot of the political discussion and beliefs, you know, in that regard. But okay.
And I guess I vote differently. I kind of look at, because no one person can accomplish anything in our government. And I look at what, how that person is going to fit into and be effective in government. And generally mm-hmm. that means voting pretty much along party lines.
I see.
So do you have a question for me?
You started to talk about it, and it was like, you know, what are your concerns about the future of our country? And, you know, we were talking about the anger and, you know, people not, you know, if they're hungry, they kind of resort to that violence and different things like that. And then we got talking about something else. So I just didn't know if you completed that thought process or not.
Well, no, I guess my concerns are children that are growing up angry are going to continue this angry culture mm-hmm. in our society. And I feel like we're the richest country in the world. I think we have the tools, if not the political will, to fix that. You were talking about Grace Med. We're the only developed country in the world that doesn't have universal health care.
Right.
I'm going, and I think a lot of that has to do with the political clout of the medical insurance companies. They don't want to see.
You're right. Well, and here, to be honest, I have, you know, always been involved with nonprofits, raising money, you know, looking at like diseases, like with the American Heart Association.
Right.
And I see how much money is being raised, or how much money is being raised for the, you know, Cancer Foundation. And why haven't we found a cure? You know, I don't understand why we, I mean, I know why, because then the medical world would not want to see cures found. But it's just, you know, look how quickly we found a vaccine, mm-hmm. you know, for COVID. So I just kind of, you know, compare, you know, looking at the vaccine with COVID and why we can't find cures for the heart and for cancer.
Well, cancer is pretty complicated. I don't know about the heart, but I think the vaccines came about because there was a lot of basic research that had already established the new techniques for making mm-hmm. the vaccines. And I think that's what expedited that situation.
Again, I just feel like there, I see how much money is being raised for research.
Right.
And again, you know, I feel like we're one of the, you know, like you say, richest country and the smartest country. And, you know, we should be able to get this figured out.
Well, and I guess where that's where we're in agreement. I think we could, I think we can fix these things. The love of my life was a research scientist at Via Christi.
Oh, really?
And she was very successful at getting money for other people to do their research. She was a very good grant writer. She got one of the first NIH grants to come to Kansas. Most NIH grants go to Harvard or Hopkins. And
right.
She got, but that was one of the first things she did when she came to Kansas, was to get a $400,000 grant for the University of Kansas Medical School. But, you know, when you look at that money, half of that money didn't go to the actual research. Half of that money went to University of Kansas Medical School for the overhead to support that
program. Right. And yes.
My wife as a researcher always found that kind of innocuous. I mean, there should be more money going to the actual program as opposed to, but she and we had some really interesting dinner conversations, because she always had a project. She did everything from teach anesthesiology residents research to she was working with one doctor on salty sweat. This doctor was an Iron Man, and he passed out because he had depleted all of the salt in his system. All the sodium in his system. And there are some people who he even made a device to measure how much salt was in your on your skin.
Wow.
But she just had a variety of interesting and she was also used by management there to interpret statistics, and you know, they had a bunch of MBAs there who had, you know, one class in statistics and didn't understand numbers very well. And Beryl did. She used to evaluate somebody else's science by looking at the statistics books on their shelves.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, again, you brought up the point about, you know, the money that is given, and, you know, so much of it goes for like overhead and stuff like that. And I'm sorry, but I think that that's a lot of the challenges why we haven't been able to find cures, because there is such overhead cost and
right
going along with that. And you know, it's amazing how much, like I talk about the Heart Association, but you know, like with pacemakers, you know, this pacemakers used to be, you know, the size of our fist, and now they're like the size of a quarter. And you know, just the technology and everything that they've been able to improve on that. And there's been progress.
I'm going to have to interrupt this for just a moment. I made the mistake of taking a diuretic before I started this, and I'm going to have to use the restroom real quick. It won't take me 2 minutes. I apologize. I probably should have.
So let me just, that's okay, no problem. I'm just gonna point out that we really only have a few minutes left here. So I'd love to hear a little bit more from Nancy, actually. So Paul, if there was any questions maybe from the list that you wanted to ask Nancy, or if there was anything else you wanted to ask her. And then lastly, I'm not sure, is one of you clicking a pen? Or
oh, I am so sorry. Like it was me.
That's okay. People do that. So if you could, I just ask you to put the pen aside. But Patrick, I'm sorry. I keep calling you Paul because I have another recording with a guy named Paul coming up here. So Patrick, I'd love to hear a little bit more from Nancy.
Going to the questions. What people or events have most influenced your political beliefs?
The people, I would say it would be family. My grandparents, when you talk about women and the places that they've had in during work and stuff, my grandmother on both sides of my family worked, and that was so unheard of back then. You know, they both had their careers. It was in education. But I would just say that it was my grandparents. And my grandfather was in research and development out at Beach Craft. And he was there for over 40 years. And when they retired, they had a lot of time on their hands. And Senator Bob Dole got a lot of letters from my grandparents over time. They were retired and they felt like that, if you think about it, we didn't have computers. We didn't have ways to, email or, anything like that, but they would write letters. And my grandfather also, when he worked at Beach, then also had a side job of fixing vehicles at night. So they both were just really hard workers and when they believed in something, they truly believed in it. But then they also had what I consider giving hearts. And that's kind of where I got where, you need to help others and be kind, to one another. My grandmother worked for the Wichita Public School System and her classroom was filled with children that had like disabilities. And she had like 20 to 25 kids in her classroom. And now that I look back on this, it's like, how did she get through the day? But she just had that energy and drive. And so they both were just, to me, people that were put together and just really was always looking out for someone that had a disadvantage and what could they do to help that person. And they always kind of turned to politics to communicate the way they felt. And they would, like I said, write lots of letters. And my grandfather was on the platform of there's got to be a way for us to utilize corn as a resource for, not having to have oil and, for our gasoline and different things like that. So they would get on a platform and you would hear about it, but they were always, they were the ones I would listen to in different things. So I miss them very much. They're gone.
Well, I didn't agree with Bob Dole on many occasions, but I respected him for his ability to mutually recognize a problem and sit down and solve the problem. Neither side was perfectly happy, but they were able to reach a compromise.
Yes. And that's the way it should be. Yes, that's the way it should be.
So do you ever feel misunderstood by people in your beliefs?
Yes. I mean, I would say that because of the movements that we have. But again, I would say I probably I'm reserved about expressing it. So I usually know how someone feels. And so just know that not to have those type of conversations.
Right. And I find myself wanting to, if I know I don't want a confrontation with this person, I try to avoid a confrontation. Right. And that's what I like about this format, is that we can just sit down and talk.
Right. Yes, and definitely.
Try to understand one another. I don't think see how to solve the problem differently, but I think we both recognize the problems and have very similar views of reality. And I guess that's one of the problems I see with many conservatives, is they, in my opinion, there's a kind of an altered view of reality. And that's where I guess I'm seeing that we're very compatible. We're seeing the problems the way I think they are. So.
Right. Well, it's been very nice to visit with you today. And Stephanie, thank you for your time. And I guess we will end our call. All right.
All right.